This episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress, from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning. Ford has one simple goal, to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. The Inside Transportation Podcast is also sponsored by Fenwick & West. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's fenwick.com. Hello and welcome to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I'm the writer of the Inside Transportation and Inside Electric Vehicles newsletters. And I am joined here by angel investor, podcaster, inside.com CEO, and the man you'll find riding a longboard drinking ocean spray.
Yes.
After this podcast, Jason Calcanis, how's it going?
I still losing my mind in quarantine. And election insanity and, you know, some kids home from school and all that. But I'm feel like 2020 is almost over and it's going to get better?
Question mark?
Is it going to get better? I don't know. It's
remember when we all thought this was just going to last like 3 weeks and we're like, we'll just shut down for 3 weeks.
That really was possible. That's the crazy thing about this. And, you know, as somebody who invests in, you know, companies for a living and covers technology and you cover technology and innovation, it's just
I do
so crazy that the United States couldn't marshal the resources to have ubiquitous testing and marshal the resources to get everybody masks and put them in their mailboxes and put in people's mailboxes 25, you know, at home kits. We would have beat it by now. So the 3 week thing, the 6 week thing is what other countries were able to, in some cases, get through this, you know?
And, I mean, it comes from the top down, right?
Yeah, you know, don't want to make the podcast political, obviously, but I hope everybody votes.
Yes, yes. I know, yeah.
And, you know, as other countries have $2, $10, $15 testing kits, and, you know, they have them everywhere, and those countries have gotten through it because if you look at the NBA bubble, I know you're, right, you're an NBA fan, yeah.
I love the NBA, yeah. I'm actually a Lakers fan, so, you know, hey.
Congratulations on buying a title. Yeah, front runner. Okay. Well, there's no Warriors. I think it's going to be interesting when the Warriors are back next year and who the Warriors are.
Well, hey, you know, think about it this way, right? You know, you buy a title, right? That's the whole point, getting to the championship, but you have that championship.
Yeah, you do. It doesn't matter if you buy it.
You got to the top of the mountain. What did it take to get there?
LeBron.
You know, LeBron James, Anthony Davis, all that stuff.
Well, LeBron
but you
James.
Get that chip. You get know, that ring.
It's LeBron James is all they had to do. LeBron James wanting to live in Los Angeles is the beginning and the end of the story for the Lakers. You know, like that's how they won that title. LeBron James wanting to be there. So congrats to them. But my point
and
was.
It's great for his brand, too. Great for everyone. You're in LA. You're in the best media market in America, right?
Yeah. I mean, arguably with New York. But that's not the best team to be. It's not the best franchise.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, thank you for that.
one day when you buy the team, you'll make it happen.
But my point was, you know, they did an amazing job with that bubble. And Adam Silver arguably did the best job in the United States and Cuomo of dealing with the COVID, you know, and the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot to learn from both of
those. Do you think that Adam Silver should run for president then?
I mean, you get my vote. I really feel like people who've operated big organizations with a lot at stake and entrepreneurs are better than people whose entire careers are based upon, you know, putting aside Trump, who, you know, is kind of a fake billionaire. But people who, you know, he inherited it, but people who earned it themselves, whether it's Bloomberg or Adam Silver, you know, worked their way up. Those kind of people are unique in the world and they got there by innovating and building great teams. And if you look at what politicians do to get there, typically, it's they accept money from special interests. That is how it works in the United States. So I know that it's a double-edged sword with billionaires or successful entrepreneurs, but I do think the, better than career politicians for sure.
Yes. Well, you know who built a innovative company and who's doing really well for themselves? And we have some breaking news for our listeners.
Oh, here we go.
Tesla.
Yes.
Just reported its fifth consecutive quarter of profit in Q3 2020. Nice. They delivered a record number of vehicles, 139,300 units. So they're doing pretty well. Elon said the Berlin and Austin factories will probably start delivering vehicles next year, which is crazy because they just broke ground on those facilities.
Crazy aggressive, but there is some precedent there with the factory in China.
Yeah, yeah, Shanghai. Some Cybertruck deliveries are expected at the end of 2021. I'm sure you're excited about that.
We'll see. Yeah, I mean, that's aggressive as well. I wouldn't discount it. And if it was a couple of months late, I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah, I'm excited about the Cybertruck.
Yeah, yeah. And they're aiming for 500,000 deliveries by the end of the year. And Elon also said he would not use LiDAR even if it was free. So you know about the whole LiDAR situation, right? Instead of Tesla has famously used cameras and radar sensors versus the more expensive LiDAR units. Mm. And it looks like Elon is not a fan of LiDAR, even if it was free. So a lot of good stuff there. We'll make sure to add a link in the show notes about the full earnings report. But let's go on to, and hey, we usually do dope or nope at the end of the show, but today is a little bit different.
We're moving it
because
up.
this is what the world is talking about today.
It's a
in
big
the
day.
Electric vehicle world.
Big day for transportation.
Huge day for transportation. And I don't know if you were watching Game One of the World Series last night, but the GMC Hummer EV pickup truck was officially unveiled, which the company bills as the world's first all-electric super truck. So there's going to be four different trims of the vehicle. Now, the entry-level Hummer EV2X is going to start at $80,000, but the top-of-the-line Hummer EV Edition 1 is going to retail for $112,000.
What?
But it's pretty sick, I would say. It's going to come with 1,000 horsepower. It's going to have over 11,000 pounds of torque. It can go 0 to 60 in about 3 seconds. There's a ton of other features, including it's Super Cruise, hands-free driving. So that's like the autopilot competitor. 18 different camera modes. It has like this really cool feature called Crab Walk, where it's going to be able
right
to
go sideways.
Drive diagonally, which is awesome.
What could go
wrong? Infinity roof. Right. Infinity roof, which is like a modular top roof system. So you'll be able to take off the panels on the top roof, much like a Jeep. It's also going to have a full body Under Armour, customized drive modes, infotainment system, which is going to be powered by the Unreal Engine. I think it looks pretty sick. What do you think, Jason? Dope or nope?
There is no way to look at this vehicle and the specs and everything and not say it's not dope. The question is, can they deliver this? And when would they deliver it? And I see spring of 2023. Fall. Wait a second. Of 2021.
So EV Edition 1, which is the top of the line model, which retails for $112,000 after options and taxes, is probably coming in at $120,000. Think of it this way. $120,000, right? Mm. How many Model 3s can you buy with that?
Two or three.
Yeah. You can buy like three or four.
Yeah.
So EV Edition 1 is coming out in fall 2021. Mm. EV 3X, which is the third in line when it comes to top of the line, right? So we have the top of the line model. The one before that is the EV 3X. That's coming out in fall 2022. EV2X is coming out spring 2023, and then the mainstream mass market version of this vehicle is going to come out in spring 2024. So that's 4 years from now.
All right. So a year from now, they will have one of these on the road. It'll have 1,000 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds for the Edition 1. Oh, that's all the Edition 1 specs.
Yes, Edition 1.
you know, I think it is a great moment to just pause for a second and say, this is a watershed moment for transportation and perhaps humanity. Mm-hmm. Tesla and Elon specifically has pushed the industry so hard and has them on their heel so much that they have taken the worst offender of all gas-powered ICE engines.
Mm-hmm. The Hummer.
And literally in their, which I think this would be the third version of the Hummer in terms of consumer Hummers, right? H1, H2, and this is the latest. This is essentially like the H3. Well, was there an
H3?
Yes,
I believe so.
Yeah. It's a good question. Let me see. I don't know how they numbered them, because taking out the military one, I thought there was an H1 and H2, and maybe there was an H3. So anyway,
there was an H3, yeah.
Yeah, so this is probably the fourth generation of this car over 20 years of consumers having them, or mm-hmm. maybe 25, and they've gone all in. And fantastic. I love the idea that we're going to have, you know, four choices in a EV for SUVs and pickups and pickup trucks and everything. Great. Let there be more competition. This was always Elon's original vision, is that he wanted to push everybody into making these. And I see that it's sold out. So I think it's dope. It's great to see. I'm sure Elon's very happy about it. Seeing more people right. do this and more innovation, it'll make everybody better. And I still go with, I guess if you were going to tell me which one I would want to go with, I still like the Cybertruck. That matches my aesthetic.
Oh,
so I think,
really?
You know,
Cybertruck over the Hummer. Huh.
I would go Cybertruck over the Hummer. I think the Hummer looks plasticky is the word I would use.
Ooh. Interesting.
It just, you know, it looks,
I mean, I can see what you mean. I can see what you mean. It doesn't have that steel body like the Cybertruck, so it looks a little bit cheap.
It looks, I don't want to say that. I wasn't going to use the word cheap, but I think that's what most people would say. I think the interior, I'll give them a lot of credit for the interior, looks beautiful. I like the fact that the roof comes off on it, which wasn't in previous ones. It does have a bed in the back. Which is very, you know, very innovative. It's like the Gladiator, I guess, in that regard. So it feels like it took a couple cues from the Gladiator. But yeah, great. Awesome. I think it's dope. I think the Cybertruck's more dope, more unique, but I think it's great to see more options.
Yeah. So what I've actually heard from the, I think we're both in this EV bubble where we hear opinion from people who are, you know, huge Tesla fans who love electric vehicles. This is kind of like a no-brainer. But what I've actually heard is a lot of people are saying, I wish there was a non-EV version of this car.
Really?
Which is funny, because it's like the whole point of developing this dope vehicle was to get people into the EV fold. This is getting people excited, right, about EVs. But it's just crazy that people still have those like misconceptions about electric vehicles. Like, oh, you know, if I get this car, I'm only going to be able to drive, you know, 250 miles, 300 miles, whatever it is, right? Versus seeing the awesome benefits of having an electric powertrain. The reason why this car is able to go that fast, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, is because of that electric powertrain. Yeah, exactly. And then you see all these other awesome features. I mean, the extract mode. So this is an adaptive suspension. And I know Tesla has adaptive suspension as well, but this one can lift the vehicle by about 6 inches on demand.
Wow.
This is a dope car. Like, great. Absolutely. I think this is going to change the game for GM. I think they really needed one of those cars to get people super excited about it. But my only concern is, so it's going to take 4 years to get to the, you know, the mass market model, which makes sense, right? Kind of what Tesla went through when they were coming out with the 3. But there's probably going to be something bigger and better by then. And what I mean by that is the Rivian, right? So by 2024, we're going to see the Rivian R1T and the R1S out on the market. And, you know, for those looking for a pickup truck, an electric pickup truck that looks very similar to this, there's going to be other options on the market by then, right? Then you also have Ford coming out with the electric F-150. So, you know,
and
by then there's going to be a lot of options.
You're forgetting one
there.
Of the major
And the
players.
Cybertruck, I know.
No,
Cybertruck.
No. You're forgetting one.
What am I forgetting? Oh, yes, the Nicola Badger.
The Nicola Badger.
It's which, never going to come out.
Yes. Well, you know what?
We'll,
you
can we'll, go, have, we'll have more on the Nicola after. The
you'll
Badger
be able to visit,
is
you'll be
topic.
Able to visit the Badger at San Quentin.
It'll be...
They'll be debuting it at San Quentin.
That's funny.
Anyway. Sorry, it's too easy. It's too easy.
If they put him there. If they put him there. But yes, so there's going to be a lot of excitement in this space right now. I'm super excited for the future of electric trucks. I mean, I think this is the because, you know, what I envision is that, you know, major companies, bigger companies that do use pickup trucks, they're going to be buying these in mass for, you know, enterprise or commercial purposes. So I think that's the next frontier. But overall, this is a dope.
It's a dope. Yeah. Dope. It's dope. Great. Congratulations. I mean. It's really just great to see the world going forward. And one thing that this all, this race doesn't take into account. Well, are we going to a break right now?
Yeah, anybody? We're going to hit a break in a
all
second.
Right, well, I will,
go ahead.
After the break, I will tell you what all of this catch-up work that's being done by the legacy automakers, why it's missing one essential piece that is going to take them many, many, many more years to catch up to Tesla. So if this seems like they're catching up, that might be fool's gold. I'll tell you why after the break. Hey, everybody. Just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
And we're back on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Johan Marino, Jason Calcanis. Jason, you left us on the edge of our seats.
Yes.
Let's hear it. What are major automakers today lacking when it comes to rolling out these new EVs?
Yeah, so it's fairly obvious that, you know, they're going to be able to produce electric vehicles, and we see it every week. Somebody releases a new one, and they're getting better, and they're starting to feel competitive. The two things that are not yet anywhere close to competitive is going to be the cost of the battery and self-driving. And I would not underestimate what a gigantic lead Tesla has in those areas. And I know people didn't understand Battery Day, or maybe they thought there was going to be some big announcement. But if Tesla continues to drop the price dramatically of their batteries, they're going to be able to compete on price in a way that, you know, buying two Cybertrucks instead of one Hummer is going to make a difference to people, or being able to buy the Model Y and the you know, a Cybertruck for your family and not have instead of the Hummer will make a difference, right? Price does matter in automotive. We've seen that. I mean, actually, Tesla was on the other end of that until they had the Model 3. You know, Teslas were just a rich person's toy, right? It was something you saw in rich zip codes and not many other places. So I think that's just super key that people are not getting. If they get their battery packs down to half the price, they could offer double the range for the same price, or they could be half the price or somewhere in between. And I think that's you kind of mentioned that people still have range anxiety. I think range anxiety goes away at 300, but it certainly goes away at 400 or 500. And then the next piece of the puzzle, that the next car to turn over, is obviously self-driving. And I think, you know, Tesla is so far ahead in that regard that it's going to be hard for folks to catch up while they're doing this, right? Companies have a hard time doing multiple things at once. And in fact, if you look at the history of Tesla, they did have challenges with supply chain in the Roadster. You know, drivetrain with a Model S. They had to use, I think they used the drive shaft and that kind of stuff, steering wheel from Mercedes. So, you know, it took time for them to get all these things, you know, to be built themselves. Batteries now, you know, companies, it takes a couple of years to get good at something. Couple of revs. So they're just going to be getting good at getting their first EVs on the road. You know, by that time, you know, who knows what else Tesla has in store. But self-driving and batteries come top of mind as things that I just don't think these other EVs are going to be able to compete with. And that's why I give Tesla still going to have a tremendous advantage.
Well, I agree with you, and I also disagree with you.
Okay, yeah,
because
please.
I know that GM has been making a lot of investments in those two areas you mentioned, right?
Yep.
So I don't think it's going to be Tesla versus everyone else kind of doing their own thing. What I think is going to happen is GM right now is actually building their own battery ecosystem that they'll be able to kind of fit any configuration of vehicle, right? Whether it's a pickup truck, whether it's a sedan, whether it's a little ATV, right? They have a system they're working on called Ultimum, something like that. This system can actually fit into any of those molds, right? And the beauty for GM is that they're actually going to be able to reach, you know, I think the cost is $100 per kilowatt hour. They're already on track to get below that. Same with Tesla, right? But
Ultium,
you're going to see all these other
cells.
Players. Ultium, yes.
Ultium cells, yes.
Yes. Ultium.
Yes, Ultium. But it's like Ultron, but not. Yeah.
Right. But what I see here is because they already struck a deal with Honda. So GM struck a deal with Honda. GM also struck a deal with Nikola for the technology, right? So I think we're going to see a few players, one or two, Tesla being one of them, GM probably being the second, providing the entire ecosystem for all these other companies that are going to be extremely late to the game when it comes to batteries. And it's going to make a lot of sense for them because it's going to be like, okay, well, we are out of time. Mercedes-Benz, they're virtually spending nothing on, you know, developing electric or connected cars, right? You're going to see all these smaller players in the space or even some bigger players use the technology from GM. I wouldn't even count out Tesla licensing this technology, licensing their technology, licensing their, you know, battery cells, all this stuff, right, to other players. Okay. That's where the real money is going to be made, where you're going to have these big automakers supplying smaller companies. And then when it comes to self-driving, Waymo and, you know, some of these other companies that specialize in developing autonomous systems, they're going to have to produce those systems for everyone else. So I think that's how these automakers are going to catch up. Obviously, when will they catch up? That's the real question, right? And how are they going to do so? And in the process of catching up, are they going to be run over and just disappear from the marketplace? That's also to be seen, right?
Yeah, I mean, and Elon was pretty upfront about that. He said publicly that he's open to selling batteries, autopilot, and powertrains to other automakers. And so, you know, he hasn't talked. I don't know if they've made any announcements in that regard, but yeah, it's pretty clear that that would be a power move for him. And then you think about the superchargers. If you're a company that wants to make an electric vehicle, and if you buy the powertrain or the batteries or some combination from Tesla, if that gives your car access to the supercharger network, we call that a network effect in the technology business, and you can look up network effect. But basically, every node on a network makes the network more valuable to all nodes. And in this case, if another 100,000 cars a year were to use those Tesla superchargers, it would increase utilization at them, lower the cost. They would make more of them, which would make increase the density and the distance between them. So this could become the amazing glue that just lets Tesla run away with it, is the supercharger networks. And I was always wondering,
it's like the iPhone and iMessage.
It would be in a way like that, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, there's many other examples of it. Obviously, social networks come to mind, or LinkedIn. You know, when you join LinkedIn, it makes it more valuable for me because, you know, we can share contacts and, you know, I can market to you or market a job to you, et cetera. So that this network effect is something to not be, and you're talking about the network effect with, you know, a keretsu of, or a conglomerate of people putting together a competing battery manufacturing. So yeah, it's likely you'll have massive consolidation in the industry. And I don't think it's far-fetched to say at some point in the world, there might be, you know, two or three car makers, you know, that really run away with this market. Because that is what happened in, you know, smartphones, right? And then what happens is the top player gets the majority of the, even though they might not have the majority of the cars, they might have the majority of the profits, which is what happened with Apple phones, right? Androids.
Yes.
Many, many more Android phones out there. But the profits are all in the Apple ecosystem. So that's another possibility is where do those go? But I think Tesla's an energy company now. So I think at some point they'll just be like, you know what? You want to use our batteries. The more batteries we produce, the lower the cost goes, and we can stop global warming. And that's really what this is all about, is just stopping global warming in Elon's mind, right? He just wants to stop, you know, and convert everybody over.
And right. And you can be sure electric that cars are just like that. That's the way, right? Solar panels, electric cars. What he's doing is that's going to lead the way.
The grid.
So yeah, I mean, like he's right. Getting people off the grid. I mean, I think the one thing that Tesla really did to impact society was to make it easy to do so. Right. Yeah. Even when it comes to buying the vehicle, even when it comes to buying solar panels. Right. If you told me, how do you buy solar panels? I have no fucking clue. Where do you go?
To take out your Tesla you app.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing I know is if you want Tesla solar panels, you just go to Tesla.com. You can order them there. They're there. Not Solar City, but Sunrun and all these other players. I mean, I think once I looked into it, Sunrun, they have to call you. They have to give you a quote. Ugh. They have to come out to the house. They have to inspect it. Then they tell you how much it costs. They're just making it easy for people to get off the grid.
Yeah.
But let's continue on to topic two. This is actually a good one for you because you might have some insight because you're, as an investor, as someone who's kind of observed the markets and, you know, over the years, TuSimple. So they're a high profile autonomous trucking startup. They always boast about investments from UPS, Navistar, and Traton. However, this new data obtained by The Information shows a different story. So they always say, hey, UPS is one of our investors. We're invested by UPS. We're working with UPS. Turns out UPS only invested $2.5 million into the startup. So they're a minority shareholder. They only own about 0.2% of the company. So it kind of called into question this tactic used by early stage startups who try to add credibility to their business, maybe try to raise more money based on this association with well-established companies. As you know, a lot of these details are kept, you know, private. So what are some of your thoughts on that, Jason? You know, being someone who's invested in a lot of companies, I'm sure, you know, when someone tells you, hey, you know, so-and-so is an investor, I'm sure that sparks up your, or gets you excited, right? So what's kind of that strategy there? Some of your thoughts on this?
So we call it social proof in the industry, and it is a valid concept that can be gamed. So if you had in the early days, you know, Kevin Rose from Digg, Tim Ferriss from the 4-Hour Workweek, Chris Sacca from Shark Tank, Mark Cuban, myself, Siam Bannister, you know, I'm talking 10, 15 years ago, in, you know, put a 10 or 25K check into your company, it anointed it, right? It gave it a little bit of, okay, great. And then you want to know the size of the check and you want to make sure that that isn't like the person's roommate from college or they went to high school together, because they might actually be doing it as a favor for them. And so the devil is in the details here. $2.5 million is not a huge amount of money, but it's not zero. So I thought the punchline was going to be 50K or 250K, and that would be really concerning. 2.5 seems like a, you know, somebody had to sign off on that. That had to go to the CFO. You know, it's seven figures. It's material. There's two commas in it. It's not three commas. It's not 10 million. It's not 100 million, but it's not insignificant. So it is definitely something you have to look out for. But that means UPS, which does a small amount of investing, actually does care.
Right.
So I put that out. It does care. And so you know, it is used for marketing purposes. I had in one case, somebody put me in their marketing deck as an advisor, and I had no recollection of being an advisor to the company, which is an official position where they give you equity. And somebody who was a friend of mine said, hey, I'm investing in this company you're an advisor to. And I called the founder. I was like, hey, I'm an advisor. And my friend had sent me a screenshot of the deck, and it had a single page with me in it. And the person said, oh, you don't remember? And I said, no. Remind me, I'm sorry. And he said, well, I was at your conference, the launch festival, and you were going to the bathroom, and I walked you to the bathroom, and you gave me the greatest piece of advice of my life, so I made you an advisor. And I was like...
Did you get some free equity out of that?
No, no. Usually you paper these things. So, yeah, in this case, this is reality. Even though it's only 0.2% of the startup, it is a decent amount of money. I thought that would have bought 1% of the company, but I guess it's a $2.5 billion company is what that sort
right,
of extrapolates.
0.2%.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because it's like it kind of makes you think, okay, all these other companies that say, hey, you know, Amazon's an investor. How much did Amazon actually give?
Yeah. And
when
you're an investor, you do ask those questions, by the way. So the other investors do ask that question.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
So it's probably, you know, maybe one of the investors that was going in leaked this information. Does that happen pretty often in the world of angel investing where this data gets leaked, or is it usually kept pretty private?
People try to keep it private. And in this case, it looks like they also knew the largest shareholder was Sundream Inc., a Cayman Island based entity, and it's not known who that investor might be. And that's the largest shareholder. What seems to have happened here is somebody took a screenshot of what's called the cap table, the capitalization table, which is just who owns what shares, what entities own the shares. And the entities are sometimes obscured with a funny LLC name, right? So somebody creates an LLC, which costs like, you know, whatever, $1,000 to set up and $1,000 a year to maintain. So for $10,000 over the next 10 years, nobody gets to know who Sundream Inc. is, a Cayman Islands-based entity. It could be the founder. The founder could be have put their shares in the Cayman Islands for tax treatments, et cetera. Maybe they want to have them domiciled there. And they might not be a U.S. citizen. They may be a global citizen. They have multiple passports, so they put it there. So they don't. If they do ever sell the shares, they don't have a tax event because they're not living in a certain country. That's a possibility there. But yeah, this is somebody leaked the cap table. It doesn't happen that often. You'd be surprised. Generally, it's fine. What does happen is sometimes multiple investors will have this cap table, and then people start calling who are trying to buy secondary shares. So I was on the cap table of Uber, Robinhood, Calm, Thumbtack, DataStax, Trello, Wealthfront, all these companies that are, you know, doing well. And people would call and say, hey, would you sell your shares to me and, you know, do a private sale without the company knowing, right? Or with the company's permission. It depends on, you know, how people do it. And so there's a lot of that going on. That's typically how this happens. The press... You know, the press tends to have very little insight into private companies. They get all the secondhand information. And like you insinuated, is this a disgruntled person? The answer is yes, obviously. Typically, this happens because some investor is not agreeing with the founder or the rest of the board on how the company's going, or a previous employee feels dejected, or somebody has an agenda and wants to build credibility with that journalist. And maybe they're, you know, washing each other's hands to get a favor type thing.
Right, right. I'm going to recreate a scene from your summer, okay?
Here we go.
Hang on.
Who is it?
I'm you, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, sorry. No. Oh, you play Jason, I play this person.
Okay.
Hello, Jason?
Yes, can I help you?
Yes, yes. Will you sell me your shares in Robinhood?
No. If you want to buy them, I'm not selling. Typically, you know, if somebody wants to buy your shares and they're smarter than you and more successful, my advice to people is don't sell, or sell 10% and enjoy a little, take a little chip off the table. You know, take a slice, but you don't sell the whole pie. You know, sometimes you take a slice off. I took a couple slices of Uber off the table in the early days. Mm-hmm. I took two slices off. Masayoshi-san came in, said, could I get a slice? I said, yeah, you can take two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, yum, yum.
The one and only, the one and only. Mm. Okay, so we're going to move on after the break.
Yes.
To the next topic, one of your other, you know, companies, Uber. Ah. They're rethinking their California business as we get closer to Election Day, so stay tuned. We'll be back.
Hey, everybody, let me take a moment to thank Fenwick and West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at Fenwick.com. That's Fenwick.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation podcast. So in a Wall Street Journal interview that happened yesterday, CEO Dara Khosrowshahi, Uber CEO, said the company would do its best to maintain operations in the state, but insinuated it may need to scale down. Now, all of this hinges on Prop 22, a ballot initiative in California that would repeal Assembly Bill 5 for gig economy companies. Now, if this proposition does not pass, the CEO said that it's likely that Uber's fleet of employees will need to become company employees, and the price of rides are going to have to increase by about 25 to 100%. As he said, they'd only be able to hire a fraction of these drivers. My guess is they would probably want to concentrate all of their operations in profitable cities, San Francisco, I'm assuming, Los Angeles, and then the rest of California is just going to be Uberless. But Jason, let's go through these scenarios. Okay.
Okay.
One of them is going
to be... Right off the bat, everybody should vote yes to Prop 22. Allow people to have choice and benefits.
There you go. They didn't even have to pay you to do that endorsement.
No, but I own a heck of a lot of Uber shares, so please.
Right.
Vote yes on 22. Yeah.
I think they have $200 million in the bank? No, $190 million.
In all seriousness, you're a freelancer. Hairstylists and barbers are freelancers. Everybody gets to be a freelancer. These drivers should be allowed to be freelancers. They're going to put money in, their accounts. And what this is going to do is just reduce the number of jobs and increase and limit choice for the drivers. So that's why I think we should allow people to be 1099. We should allow people to be freelancers. It's just always been my belief that individuals have many choices of where to work. And if they want to be a freelancer, they should be allowed to be a freelancer. What's the government's job to tell you you can't work 2 hours, take 4 hours off, then work 3 hours and make your own schedule? And, if we force them to be full-time, just stay-at-home moms and dads and single parents who want to just get a couple hours in here of extra work, they're not going to be able to do it. So it's really going to hurt people, and I mean that sincerely.
And a reminder that pretty much, I think 75%, 80%, it's a high number of drivers, of gig economy workers are doing it on the side.
The other side of this, correct. Exactly. And the other side of this is all of the unions, and California's unions are just destroying California. They are basically trying to get all the gig economy workers to be unionized so they can take their percentage of their revenue and, supposedly fight for them. It's like, be careful what you wish for,
Yeah, because, in every case, it's not that you're just instantly going to be ushered into dreamland where you have a, $65,000 job offer waiting for you to be an Uber driver full time, benefits, all of this
That's
stuff.
That's definitely
right?
not going to happen.
It's not that easy. And this proposition does not get to that point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if, people really care about Uber and Lyft drivers, and this is just my personal thoughts, obviously. Not the thoughts of Inside, not the thoughts of Jason. But if they really cared about drivers, you would vote yes. Because there's a lot of people who do this part-time. I know a lot of people who do it.
The majority.
The majority, right? And imagine, you've been making, especially during this pandemic, right? You're doing deliveries for Uber Eats. You're doing DoorDash, right? You're trying to supplement. Maybe you're on unemployment pay. You're just trying to make something. Imagine the next day, because of this ballot initiative, you just can't make that. Whatever that $200, $300 might be each week, right?
Yep.
People need that money. Like, I think there's just a, also just a miscommunication on that this proposition would actually give, you know, workers for these companies a few more added benefits than they have right now.
Yep.
So there is a minimum wage.
There's a concession, yes. Right. And they get paid for driving to pick up the person. So they're not just getting paid for the time they're on the ride. They're getting paid also to get to the destination to pick up the food or to pick up the driver or whatever it is. So, yeah.
Right. My only gripe would be I do wish that this minimum wage floor would apply for when drivers are waiting for rides, because I know that's a famous complaint. Obviously, I mean, at that point, it is kind of.
Yeah, and then
like
it becomes full time. Yeah, that becomes full-time.
Right. But, you know, I do think people should have the flexibility to make money however they want, right? But my question to you.
Yes.
If this proposition does not pass, and right now it's in the middle, it's like people are still undecided for the most part.
Yep.
So I think it's like neck and neck, right? Based on polling that I recently saw. But if this does not pass, do you think that Uber is going to actually follow through with withdrawing from certain areas in California? You know, do you think that he's actually, the CEO is actually going to follow through with this plan?
100%. I think they will shut down in various areas in California. I'm not sure they will leave all areas. What will likely happen is people who are in less dense areas will either have to pay double or not have the service available. That's the basic reality of it, because one of the things that happens right now, when you just think about it, if you've asked anybody who's a driver, a lot of drivers who are in rural areas will keep Uber on. They'll be in their house and they'll be watching TV or hanging out with their kids, and a call will come in. Oh, it's an airport job. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a good job, right? Oh, it's in front of this sports arena. I accept the job. I'm going to be there in 9 minutes, right? And, you know, wait times in the burbs might be a little bit longer. People expect that. That's totally fine for them.
Exactly.
And so that person wouldn't be able to pick up, let's say, two or three $30 jobs, $20 jobs. That could be the difference between making rent or not. If you say, oh, that person has to be in an 8-hour shift right now, getting paid this, getting benefits, all of a sudden, it just doesn't make sense to have Uber in that neighborhood. It doesn't make sense to have Uber in that, you know, city. And that's what's going to happen. And
yeah,
it's a you're basically putting your finger on the scale of a marketplace that's perfectly honed, because you're basically Uber saying, we're going to take 25% and you can either take the job or not. And the person who's ordering, if they don't get a ride and it's too low of a fee, then people don't take the job.
Right.
And so there was this perfect marketplace, just like Airbnb is a perfect marketplace. So everybody can pick what they want to do, right? And so it's just going to mean Uber is going to have to get rid of UberX maybe, and they'll just go to Uber Black cars, and you won't be able to get an UberX. You won't be able to get a $20 ride. You're going to have to go for a $60 ride. And you know what? It'll only benefit Uber in terms of the race here, because Uber's the lead company with the most cash and the dual revenue stream. So they're just going to put everybody in Uber shirts and only have the top level folks, and they'll dictate what kind of car you can drive, and the number of drivers will go down 80%, and then, you know, there'll be a smaller radius. But Uber's profits is a very small percent in California, so people are overestimating exactly what impact this will have on Uber.
Especially right now, because there's like virtually no rides. It's a fraction of what it used to be, right?
It's come back in the
Asia. Impact people.
Yeah, my understanding is it's coming back in
Hong Kong, right?
Yeah, they've had a lot of news about Asia and stuff like that coming back. So I think there'll be some good news. I think their earnings call is tomorrow after we tape this. So.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's like this is only going to affect the drivers. Like you said, right now the demand is not huge for Uber. So if people are taking an Uber, I think they're just willing to pay whatever it costs, right? But do I think they're going to increase prices by 100% in California and exit every market? I don't think so. I think they're just going to jump back in and bite the bullet if it doesn't pass. But there's going to be repeated attempts to change that law, because that law was signed and passed just because of Uber and Lyft. And there's a lot of people in California that are probably struggling, like you said, to pay rent because of that law. And my concern is also disabled people and people who have been able to take advantage of this platform, right? Like, it's hard to get a job. It's not easy to get a job. I think everyone thinks, oh, it's just easy to get, you know, a full-time position, a part-time position, whatever it is. It's not so easy for people who are disabled. And what Uber has done is it's given people this new lease, this new opportunity to work a little bit, right? Even if they don't necessarily have the skills to be at a permanent job, per se.
You might say it's a safety net.
And they're
going to
be the ones impacted.
You might say it's a safety net. Now, if you were to look at it as a safety net versus unemployment, which is what's going to happen to a bunch of people, they're going to file unemployment, right? If they can't get jobs, they're going to be on, food stamps, whatever it is. So, you know, one of the beautiful things about this gig economy is it took a lot of pockets of employee. It created these little pockets of revenue generation, like you're saying, that were on demand, where people who said, you know what, I just need a couple extra bucks, and they go do that. There's other ways to make a couple extra bucks that might not be as legal or, you know,
organized,
easy, you know, like
can literally just download an app and start making money.
Right. And
when
so,
was that ever the case when you were younger, Jason? You know?
Exactly. No, when we were kids, we used to go from store to store and say, is there anything we can do? And like they'd be like, yeah, you can clean the garbage cans out back. We'll give you 10 bucks. And three or four guys would go in the back and clean the stuff. Or we would go door to door shoveling. That was our gig economy. With snowed, we get our shovels. We immediately go door to door. Hey, well, can we shovel for 20 bucks? They say, I'll give you five. We're like, okay. And we just take the cash and do it.
Don't tell the government.
Well, yeah, it was all cash-based economy. So, you know, the whole thing is driven by these unions, and people don't want it. It's being forced on them. So what will eventually happen is this will go to the Supreme Court of California, Supreme Court of the United States, and we're going to have to come up with some concepts of if you pass a certain number of hours of working, let's just pick a number, 1,000 hours, which is half time, mm-hmm. you get X amount of benefits, which is what they're doing now. They're putting some money into a benefit fund. Then if you hit 2,000, then you get this other set of benefits, right? And that would be perfectly agreeable to everybody. And, you know, it's only these unions in California, which is completely mismanaged because of unions. The average salary in San Francisco of union work, of city workers is $170,000, I read. So, like, we really are having a hard time controlling costs here. And the unions are the reason.
Yes, yes. Well, wrapping up today's show, one of your favorite topics,
yes.
Nicola. That
Lord.
Pickup truck, right? The Badger.
It's at $8 billion right now. I just want to send a message to anybody. I think it's $8 or $9 billion right now. If you lost half your money on this, 50 cents is still money. Take whatever money you have and put it into Disney, Netflix, Amazon, Uber, whatever you can get your hands on. Anything but Nicola. Get out of Dodge.
Maybe even the upcoming Jason Calcanis SPAC.
Yes, absolutely. The inside SPAC.
Yes, yes. So Nicola CEO Mark Russell referred to the Badger as a project to the Financial Times. He basically said that the company's business plan was, or institutional investors were more interested in the heavy trucks and hydrogen infrastructure versus what was essentially a pet project by Trevor Milton that came out of nowhere, according to multiple reports. They were going to build the Badger in collaboration with GM. GM wants more equity now because, you know, the stock's worth nothing. But they were going to give them 10% of Nicola to make this truck. Probably doesn't make a lot of sense to give them more equity in the company if this is just a pet project, right? Earlier this month, Nicola removed the Badger pickup truck from its business plan. So, Jason, do you think that this pickup truck is ever going to see the light of day?
No.
No.
No. 100% no. I mean, they're so far behind, you know. I mean, and wouldn't they be competing with themselves and their own trucks? Like, didn't a new...
So the GMC Hummer EV would be competing with it. I think they're also developing a few... I think they're doing like a Silverado electric vehicle, all of this stuff. But I actually saw something today where the GM chairman actually mentioned the deal with Nicola because there was so much hype on the Hummer EV...
Yes.
That I think they're reconsidering whether they should actually work with Nicola. Like I said, this deal with Nicola and GM was a killer deal for GM, right?
Yes, it was a no-brainer.
From the beginning.
It's free money.
No-brainer. Free money, basically. But, you know, obviously, you're not just going to give 10% of the company that's worth virtually nothing now. So,
well, no, it's still worth $8 billion, which I would say is arguably 20 times what I would value it at. I would value the company at low hundreds of million. So it's still worth 20 times. So, I mean, I think for them, it's just also messaging, like, do we need to be involved in this? Is it fraud? Is it going to be lawsuits forever? They're going to get dragged into it. It's a distraction. It, you know, a lot of times these big companies have stories and they're telling a story to the market. And so GM, like, coming out with a Hummer, doing the Cadillac Lyric or whatever it is. They're doing
the SUV.
Yeah. So they're going all in on electric and building these new factories. And, you know, they've got other fish to fry. You know, they got a lot of other things on their plate, and this could be indigestion, you know, and a distraction. And every time he's going to, this, you know, CEO launches something new, they're going to ask about the Nikola train wreck. It's just not worth it. You know, sometimes you just,
I think they should just rebrand. They have to rebrand. They Nikola? Have to get away from that Nikola brand.
100%. Yes. And, you know, I called them out on that. Like, why would you ride Elon's coattails on that? Why don't they just call it, like, you know, if it's going to be the if it's going to be a trucking company, just give it a trucking company name and disappear. Just make yourselves, like, totally under the radar. Do the opposite of what's his name was, you know, planning on doing in terms of being high profile and doing launch events. Just go totally underground. We provide trucks for beer companies to ship stuff. Period. End of story. That's what we do. We're a trucking company. We'll move shit for you.
So if there's any Nikola exec board members listening to this podcast right now, make sure to put me down and put Jason down as advisors.
Go boring. Like, literally, we are an infrastructure company. We move stuff. We're a logistics company. We use trucks to do it. We do hydrogen trucks. We have our reasons for doing that. If you want us to move some stuff for you, you know, fill out this form and we'll have a, you know, an account executive call you and move some stuff for you. The end.
And that's a good business to be in. Like, those are the businesses that always make the most money. The ones that are very low key. Hey, actually, we power this whole infrastructure. Yeah. But fill out a form.
Yeah. We'll, you know, like, literally no more, you know, CNBC, no nothing. Just, you know, here's our report. Here's how many customers we have. Here's how many cases of beer we moved. I would literally make the metric of the company how much stuff they moved. We moved this many pounds, this many miles. That's it. We're done.
Yeah.
And just totally distance yourself from this idea that you're competing with Tesla or Fisker or this whole cohort, because it's like me and you joining the NBA as the backcourt for the, you know, pick a team. Like, we're the new backcourt for the Knicks. It's like, really? Okay, I know who's going to be the last place team now. The Knicks. Like, they're losing.
The team, like, with the 5'6 player, which is me.
I'm 5'8 and a half on a good day. So let's.
Yeah, anyway,
lower the rims.
That's a wrap. That's a wrap on today's show.
I missed you.
I missed you too.
I know. We're back.
And we'll be back soon with another podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you all next week. Take care.
Vote, everybody.